Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's easy to move down in class, but to move up in class, it's close to impossible. And whatever class you're born into, most people stay in that class, you know. And to move up, it's a challenge. It's a huge challenge.
This is Opportunity Costs from Death, Sex, and Money.
There are wealthy people who call themselves upper middle class.
A series all about class, which we think about a lot.
Everything I wanted, I got.
And need to talk about more.
I worked really hard, but I very much am poor.
I'm Anna Sale. When Ramal Johnson emailed us, he was in his first semester of a PhD program at Howard University in D.C. He's studying communications. And he was working two retail jobs to afford rent in the Washington area, one at Best Buy and one at Express. His days were long.
My alarm would go off at 4 a.m., and I would spend about 10 minutes thinking about how I got into this mess. And then I would get up, shower, do all of that, dress, and I would have to leave my apartment by 4:45 to get on the train. I'd take the train to Arlington, Virginia, get to work at Best Buy, work usually from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. Then I get to Express, work there, get off at about 11 p.m. and then get back home about 12:30 a.m. So now it's the next day, and then sleep until 4 a.m. and then do it all over again.
What did you picture your life being like when you thought about what it would be like to be a PhD student at Howard?
Not like this.
Ramal laughed a lot while we talked, but the email he'd written to us was more somber. He wrote, "I don't go out. I'm considering applying for food stamps. I've sold my possessions for money, but I'm running out of things to sell."
I had an iPad, then I sold it. And I had a TV, I sold that.
Did you sell them at a pawn shop or on Craigslist, or how did you sell them?
Craigslist, yeah. And, the TV I sold on Craigslist, and then the iPad I sold on the app called Letgo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sold it on there.
And right now, how would you define yourself class-wise?
I guess you could say working class, but I come from a middle-class family. So I have a middle-class mentality. But as far as finances are concerned, I guess it'd be working class. I had to do this thing a few months ago, and I had to turn in my taxes. And it said, you know, how much money did you make last year? And I looked at it for the first time, and it was like $13,000 last year. It's like, sheesh. So, yeah.
Growing up, Ramal felt much more stable class-wise. His mom was in the military, and they lived on a base in Massachusetts. It was very clear there where he stood in relation to his peers.
Their parents and your parents are making pretty much, or a lot of times, the exact same amount of money. So your lifestyles are pretty much identical.
But Ramal says it doesn't feel that way at Howard.
Howard is like the epitome of class differences when it comes to the African-American community. You have everybody from, you know, celebrity children sending their kids to this school to working class people who are here on full ride scholarships going to this school.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has a different mindset when it comes to money. We all don't think about it and respect it the same way.
What's something that you notice a student doing who's maybe in your department as a grad student that you can see that their life is different than yours class-wise?
Gosh, there's so many. A lot of them have, you know, really, really nice cars. They don't, and I'm not saying all, so I don't want anybody to email me. Ramal said all. No, Ramal did not say all. I'm not saying all. a lot of them, they don't take school that seriously. And I guess it's because they don't really have to, you know. With people like me, it's either an education or nothing. We don't have anything to fall back on. We have nothing to go back to.
Ramal is the first in his family to go to college. He's got his master's, too. And he's almost $200,000 in student loan debt. When he started at Howard, he thought he'd be able to defer loan payments, but he couldn't. That's what led to those long days of double shifts. And sometimes it still wasn't enough.
With Express and Best Buy, you can go online and see how much your paycheck would be maybe like 2 days before you actually get it deposited into your bank account.
Uh-huh.
So I would go and I would see how much I'm getting. And then I would like, you know, add the two paychecks up and I would say, okay, this is how much I'm going to get. This is how much I need. Okay, I'm good. But if I didn't have it, then I would say, okay, what am I going to do? I was always in survival mode, you know, not so much how much I owed, but what do I need right now, you know?
So you just moved to this place, and then just a few months later, you find yourself in a pretty dire financial crisis. Did you have anyone in your life there to talk to about money?
No. I don't want to say I kept it a secret, but if I wanted to talk to somebody about it, I didn't know who I would talk to.
Did you feel angry at anyone?
I didn't feel angry. I felt, I don't know how I felt. I kind of felt like a failure, you know. I kind of felt like I'm finally here and now I have to go home after like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. I was just depressed. I was sad. And I went through the stages, you know, I was angry, but at nobody in particular. I guess I was just angry at the situation.
Why do you want to get a PhD?
If I had to really answer the question, I guess it's because it opens so many more opportunities and people take you much more seriously, especially as an African-American male, people don't take me seriously in the first place. So with the PhD, I'll have more of a chance. It's just always been something I told myself I'm going to do.
When you think about where you'll land professionally and class-wise,
mm-hmm.
what do you picture?
Eventually, it will be upper middle class with my education and income. Just not tomorrow. There's a pretty good chance I'll be making six figures in the future. You know, living in a nicer neighborhood. I may even finally buy a car, which I don't think I ever will, to be honest. But I'll be able to afford a car, be able to afford, you know, really nice vacations. And that's where I'll eventually land. But I think I'll always have a middle class mentality.
And when you think about that job, the over six figures job, mm-hmm. what's that based on? Like, how do you know that you'll earn that after you get a PhD?
Well, most people who have PhDs, if not six figures and close to it, so they're making, you know, 80, 90,000 a year. Plus I live in DC. So, you know, coming to DC, there's so many more opportunities and there's so many more doors that are opening for me, and so many more doors will open once I get my my last degree, because after this I'm not going back to school. I'm done.
Coming up, how Rimal thinks about his retail jobs and why he didn't invest much energy trying to make friends with his coworkers there.
I guess I never really felt a strong connection, because I felt, you know, I'm just using this as a way to eat. I need to eat. I need money. So this is what I'm going to do until I find something more appropriate with my degree and my education.
The majority of Americans self-identify as somewhere in the middle class, including a lot of you.
I guess I would be working middle class.
Upper middle class.
Lower middle class.
Middle class.
Upper middle class.
The lower edge of the middle class.
The median household income in the United States is just over $59,000. But as Rimal's experience shows, figuring out just what middle class means is complicated. For some people, it's being able to own your own home or take your family on a vacation once a year. For others, it's what you do on the weekends or what kind of foods you like to eat. If you want to get an idea of where you fit, the Pew Research Center built a calculator to help. It takes into account where in the country you live and how many people live with you, because that changes things too. There's a link to that calculator on our website for this series at deathsexmoney.org/class. On the next episode, I talk with one woman about how divorce affected where she fits class-wise.
When I look back now, I see I was really in denial about the finances. And I wish that from the first day I had made major changes.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. Ramal Johnson has kept his life at school very separate from his shifts at his retail jobs.
I don't tell a lot of people getting a PhD because I don't want them to think that I'm bragging or boasting. So that's a middle-class mentality thing. We try to fit in. We don't like to stand out too much.
Mm-hmm. When you think about your class situation right now, mm-hmm. is there anything that embarrasses you?
I guess only when, see, okay, here's the thing about being Black. Here's the thing. A lot of people don't realize that there is a middle class when it comes to African Americans, you know, mm-hmm. because of course the only time you really see African Americans on TV is when we're on welfare or we're basketball stars or rap stars or music stars. So a lot of people believe those are the only two African Americans that exist. So sometimes when I'm talking to somebody who is an African American from working class, they think I grew up like them. So they'll say things to me and I just don't understand, or I've never had those experiences. That can be a little embarrassing. And so I try to relate to them, but after a while they can tell, you know, I did not grow up the way they did. And then there are the African Americans who are, you know, wealthy families. So they'll talk to me like I have all this money. So that can be a little embarrassing when people assume things that are totally incorrect about me.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned in those examples, like how other Black people treat you. I'm sure another layer is also like white people who are even more clueless when it comes to race.
Let's get into it. just being African American, being Black, you have all these stereotypes on you from the minute people see you or they hear your voice or they see your name, you know, oh, I bet he's going to be really loud, or, oh, I bet she's not going to show up on time. And a lot of us, we try to, you know, not fit those stereotypes. We're trying to distance ourselves from their beliefs. But then you come off as we say in the Black community, you come off as bougie, you know, oh, you think you're better than me. So it's like you have one foot in one world and one foot in the other world. And it can be really exhausting because you want to fit in with your class, but then you also want to fit in with your race. And a lot of times they don't fit together.
Yeah. So I'm struck that in the midst of that you had the courage to write us an email and say, I'm having a really hard time.
Yeah, at first I was a little wary, but then I thought, you know what, I should be honest because there's a lot of people who are going through what I'm going through as far as money and class is concerned. But, you know, in American culture, we don't talk about money. We don't talk about class. It's this thing that we all are somewhat aware of, but we're told you never talk about it. So when people are having money issues or they're having class issues, they feel alone. And they feel like nobody will understand. Nobody gets it. I'm by myself in this. Nobody wants to be the first one to say, I'm having money issues. And then once you say it, everyone else is like, oh, I'm having money issues too. Oh, yeah, me too. But we're all just kind of sitting around waiting for somebody to say it first. I'm not the kind of person to, you know, put on airs and act like everything's fine and spend more than I have. But, you know, I see a lot of people who do that. And I know this is going to sound silly, but sometimes I envy them because I feel like, you know, I wish I could say, well, you know, I just spent all my money on clothes, or I spent all my money chasing skirts or whatever. In order not to have money problems, I just stopped doing that and my money problems will go away. But my money problems were because just simply I was not born with a lot of money. I was not born to a family with a lot of money. It wasn't anything that I did. And there are a lot of people, you know, like that who have issues that it's no fault of their own. It's just the card they drew in life.
That's Ramal Johnson, a PhD student at Howard University. When a professor heard he was considering dropping out because of money, she helped him get a teaching assistant job. That covers his tuition for a full course load this semester, so he's quit his two retail jobs. To cover living expenses, he's relying on more student loans. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based at the Center for Investigative Reporting in Emeryville, California. Our team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. Thanks to Dan DeZula for his help on this series. Our interns are Catherine Hsu and Angeli Mercado. The Reverend John DeLure and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Find us there at Death, Sex, Money. This series, Opportunity Costs, is produced in collaboration with BuzzFeed News. All this week, you can read personal essays and hear conversations with our listeners about class and money in America today. The website is deathsexmoney.org/class. I called Ramal back at the start of the semester to see how he's doing now that he's not working those double shifts. He told me he's getting a lot more rest, and his body is still getting used to it.
One thing I was surprised at was how long nighttime was. because I was so used to getting up at 4, I wasn't sleeping. So now that I was sleeping, I would wake up and I would say, oh, let's do nighttime. What am I going to do?
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.